Bound.
Welcome to Books and Beyond with Bound. I'm Tara Khandelwal.
I'm Michelle DeCosta.
And in this podcast, we uncover the stories behind some of the best written books of our time.
And find out how these books reflect our lives and our society today.
So tune in every Wednesday to enter a whole new world with a new author and a new idea.
Yes, and after 3 years and 2 million listens, we are back with the Power Packed Season 5.
With hard-hitting questions and life-changing books.
So let's dive in.
Today is a very special episode because I'm interviewing an author who's written one of the best books I've read, non-fiction books I've read this year. We have Radhika Iyengar with us, and she's written a book called Fire on the Ganges, Life Among the Dead in Banaras. And it's this amazing book that chronicles the everyday realities of the dorms in Banaras. And these are a group of people who are in charge of cremating bodies in Banaras. And the book plunges into Banaras's past. And what I really liked about the book is that it narrows its lens on a few characters. And it tells their tales of struggle, survival, loss, ambition, betrayal, and love. We go inside the narrow lanes of Banaras. We learn about these people's lives, the challenges they face. And the chapters also cover a broad spectrum, right? From casteism to intercaste marriage, workers' rights, environmental pollution, and even the cultural life of an average dorm's life. And Radhika has been working on this book for over 8 years. So we're going to find out all about it today. Welcome, Radhika.
Thanks, Tara, for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Okay, so the book has had quite a journey because you started working on it in 2015. And, you know, in an interview that I read online, you said that, you know, you wanted to upend this unidimensional representation that you had about the dorm's identity. So could you tell me and our listeners a little bit more about how this book came to be? And what did you want to upend when it came to, you know, these people's unidimensional representation?
Sure. Thanks for that great question, Tara. So this journey of mine began back in 2015 when I was pursuing my master's and I had to look for a subject for my thesis project. And I happened to read an article about the dorm community, which stirred my initial curiosity, one can say. And I wanted to really try to understand if there is more information available and whether this is something I can report on. And when I tried looking for information, there wasn't sufficient information available at that time on this particular community. You know, there wasn't informed, accessible, alternative narratives surrounding this community, because whatever there was information in terms of academic literature or even documentaries, it only focused on the dorm's lives at the cremation ground, their crematory work. And I felt that surely there is more to their lives which need to be documented and reported on. And I wondered whether, you know, what do the men do once they are done cremating the corpses? When they go back home, what is their day like? What is their night like? Where are the women? Why are they unseen? Why are they not present in public spaces? What are their aspirations? Are they allowed to also step out of the house and work and earn? And even the children, you know, whether they were getting quality education, what were their own dreams? And yes, so that was my starting point, really. And that's where it all began.
Yeah, and then it sort of evolved over 8 years. So could you tell, you know, me a little bit about what is a day in the life of one of your characters, right? So you show that, as you said, you show the ecosystem, not only from the blazing fires that the dorms have to withstand day in and day out. You show, you know, how children pick shrouds to how they wash the ashes for gold and things to sell. And for them, they say it's a divinely ordained role. You know, it's not a vocation, but a duty. that the gods have handpicked for them despite the many challenges. So what's a day in the life of, a dom that you've observed?
So if we talk about the dome men, again, like you mentioned, they do consider it to be their duty, which has been accorded to them by God. And even though they challenge it in their head, they are basically bound by their circumstances, and they can't look for alternative professions. It's quite difficult for them to get alternative professions and look elsewhere. And so they just, I think, accept their life and go to the cremation ghats every day. The men work for, so for example, if I talk about Mohan, who is a corpse burner, and he features in my book, and I've had many interviews with him. He sometimes leaves his home at 7 a.m. in the morning and comes back at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I mean, it's a whole 18 to 20 hours sometimes. Like, their work is very, very strenuous, and over there, just the circumstances and the working environment is so tough. Imagine working in, you're surrounded by clusters of burning pyres, and there is intense heat, particularly during the summers, and there's smoke sort of engulfing you. The ash swirls in the air, it stings your eyes, the smoke stings your eyes. It's just so, let's say it's a very unrewarding and dangerous profession, which they do every day. And sometimes they burn their hands, sometimes they burn their feet. And also the smell and looking at bodies being burned, it's their job. This is what their life is all about. There is no future for them to look forward to. And that's where they are at, unfortunately. So of course, I've featured, I've spoken to the dome men, I've spoken to the women, I've spoken to the children. So the book is an encapsulation of their stories.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really liked about the book, right? Because apart from all of the facts that you give us about the ecosystem and all of that, the characters really come alive. And the book is really driven by these characters' journeys. And these characters, it's almost like reading fiction in a way, because all of these characters have such compelling stories. So you have Lakshya, who's dating a Brahmin girl, Komal. And there's so much backlash, because she's obviously from a different caste. And he is determined to sort of, be with her. And then all the challenges that they face, right, from, her getting a lot of abuse in her community. And then you follow this character, Dolly, who's lost her husband. And the way that you portray how her husband died is sort of, it's sort of like a murder mystery. So we don't know, who did it. So there are all these characters and their love lives and their, and the various odds that they have to sort of overcome. So, why this choice to include sort of these stories in this kind of a way?
That's a great question, Tara. And I think when I first went to Chand Ghat, by the way, just for clarification, Chand Ghat is a fictional name given. Of course, Dom Basti exists, but just for the protection of the community members, I changed the name of their Basti. So Chand Ghat is, when I went there the first time, I met Bhola, who's also one of the individuals in the book. And through him, I met other members of the community, like Dolly, who you mentioned. And what fascinated me about Dolly was that she was a huge source of inspiration, only because she is the first woman in her Basti to start a small business and own it. And she's doing it successfully now, But like you mentioned, she's a widow. She lost her husband at a very young age, and she's a young widow with five children, and she had to figure out a way to survive and earn. And unfortunately, the Dom community is such in Banaras that women are not, quote unquote, allowed to step out of their homes and work or have any kind of financial autonomy. So when she decided to start her own business, she did face a certain degree of resentment from the community members. And there's an incident which I've also talked about in the book where she steps out of her house. So the business, the shop is a small shop she has started right at the threshold of her one room home, which is very small. And there she sells namkeen packets and beedis and fruities and all of those things. And so she has to go maybe twice or thrice a week to buy more of these items from the larger marketplace. And so one of those days when she did step out of the home, and she had made sure that her children were in the care of a sister-in-law, so there was nobody at home at in her house. And so when she stepped out, she spent about an hour, maybe 2 hours sometimes, to buy the products. And when she came back, she there was this overwhelming smell of cow dung in her house. So somebody had actually thrown fistfuls of cow dung from the window into her home because they didn't like the fact that she was and now an independent woman. And because she could potentially inspire other women in the community to start their own profession, maybe start some like a small shop or do something else. So those are the kind of things that were really first of all, disturbing to know that such circumstances or incidents happen. And when Dolly narrated this incident to me, it was just very disconcerting to hear. But yeah, so what I found very motivating about her was the fact that she was still resilient, regardless of anything else that was coming her way. And she continues to run this very successful small business in the Basti. She is still the only woman doing so at the moment. And that's why I featured her. And there are many, of course, other individuals like Dolly who are really challenging this landscape, which is caste-ridden and gender-biased, and they're doing it. And they all feature in my book.
Yeah, I really liked Dolly's story. And one of the things that I personally really liked is the women's stories. Because, just as a reader, that's something that I'm interested in and how women navigate spaces. And you also talk about, how they're not allowed out of their houses and the specific sort of family dynamics that are in these dorm households. For example, the women are not allowed to sleep on the bed and only the men are allowed. So you do learn a lot about, family dynamics and how caste plays a role in the culture of this community through the stories.
Yes, absolutely. I think if I've managed to do that, then I think that's great because otherwise, so far, there hasn't been enough written about the domes beyond the cremation ground. So that was the purpose. So thank you for pointing that out, Tara.
And one of the stories I think that I really sort of was shocked by in terms of women and how women are treated in the community is the same character Dolly and her marriage to Second Lal and how she already is engaged to somebody before she's engaged to Second Lal and Second Lal's mother starts a rumor that she's going around with Second Lal. And that's why, she has to call off the marriage to the other person and get married to Second Lal. So, also like how rumors spread and how sort of women's lives are navigated. But I want to also ask and know more about your process. So, You obviously, you know, have gone and lived there. It must have been very difficult for you as well to firstly get access and get, you know, get the people that you've interviewed to open up in such a way. And then also seeing all of these things, I mean, they're quite disturbing. You know, the kind of imagery, the kind of descriptions in the book, the kind of descriptions of you know, the bodies burning, body parts, all of those things. So what was it like for you?
How I got them to share their experiences, to be honest, it was very tough initially. When I went to Manikarnika Ghat, the doormen were not so forthcoming in speaking to me. And you know, that's something completely understandable because who would want to speak to a complete stranger and open their world, their lives to that particular person? But I also feel that they weren't so receptive because they weren't used to having a woman approaching them and asking them certain questions. And also they, you know, the men have these shifts and they are very time conscious of their work. So she'd honestly, they didn't give me that much time. So my initial process was just standing at a distance, and just observing them and their work and what they do, how they do it, how they interact with each other, all of that. For women, to be honest, it was relatively easier. And I would only say this because because I, as a woman reporter, had access, I could enter their home and have conversations one on one sometimes, you know, which maybe a male reporter would not be able to have. So that was, I would say, a very great advantage. But yes, even then, speaking to the women, they weren't as open. Like initially, our conversations were very, very formal. They were very focused, I would say. And sometimes they would wonder why am I asking them questions. And so I spent a lot of time explaining to them what I was doing, why I was reporting, that I was writing a book about them, about the community. And over a period of time, I think because I became this familiar presence, because I kept returning to Chand Ghat and I kept meeting them. This you know, they became, I would say, like our relationship became somewhat of a like it took a degree of understanding and time to build that relationship where they could feel comfortable and secure enough to talk to me, to open their lives to me and tell me things that that bothered them, that they loved doing, what their own personal dreams were. And so that was something that took time, but I'm very grateful for it. It was a very rewarding and an ex it was a very rewarding experience, something which I learned from a lot as well. And I also realized that it takes, you know, you have to make patience your friend. You have to have you have to be committed to the degree of research. You have to ask questions from an informed space. You have to have empathy, and all of that. And also, I feel, you know, I was very careful about my line of questioning. So I would, when I would ask them a question, I would always ask myself whether the answer would probably give an important insight to that particular person or the community. So those were my processes, as in one sense. And also, I feel like over a period of time, our conversations also became very lengthy. And those were the moments which were very organic and very free flowing. And it was in these moments when something very insightful suddenly would come up. You know, it would suddenly surface out of nowhere, like somebody would say something or a hand gesture, respond, like a body language towards another person in the room would change. And that would really give to me as a reporter it would give an insight into that particular person, or what the relationship between two people are. So I think that was my process. And what was the other question? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I just, it must have been very difficult for you to sort of, be there in that environment, and also the kind of description of, the body's burning, all of those things, and to, and for you as a person to be confronted by that.
Yes, I mean, I would say that of course one would get affected by what you see. And when you're going there as a reporter, I feel for me personally, I was very cognizant of the fact that how prevalent caste system is, and how prevalent caste discrimination is, and how it impacts individuals. But going there, going to Manikarnika Ghat, going to Chand Ghat, and speaking to the individuals over there, and just seeing their lives firsthand, made me realize how deep-rooted this caste system is in our country, and how it impacts everyone to such a great degree, specifically the domes. And there was this instance where I used to go to the ghats, and sometimes the children from the community would accompany me, and they would always try to avoid a certain route, one particular alley that would lead to the ghats. And initially, I didn't think twice of it. They would always say, "Didi, yahan se jana, let's take this other route." And I always wondered why they would want to take a longer route, but I didn't give it too much thought. But when it happened quite often, then I asked them, like, "What's the deal? Why do you specifically try to avoid this one gully?" And so they told me, so there is a particular temple there. And the priest in that temple always shoos them away. He doesn't want them to be anywhere near the temple. And so that really bothered me, when I learned this. And we in newspapers we read about these really gruesome forms of caste violence. There are the honor killings, there are the lynchings and whatnot. And of course, they're really terrible incidents, but there are also smaller acts of caste violence that occur every day, and these children experience it. And to grow up in such an environment where they're constantly belittled, where they're constantly told you're good for nothing, where they're constantly told that you're an untouchable, you can't enter this particular temple, it really affects your psyche. And you grow up with that. So these were the moments which really impacted me.
Yeah, I can only imagine, reading your stories, reading the stories of the character, the domes, it really did come alive. And one of my favorite characters was Bhola. And I felt that story was just so amazing because he gets a chance to study because of a scholarship. And he is so determined to leave Chand Ghat, and he is so determined to go to college. And then when he goes to college, he doesn't tell anybody that, about his caste, and he tries really, really hard to assimilate. And then and then in that chapter you give examples of students who, have been discriminated by not only their peers but by teachers and by authorities because of their caste. And so what he's doing is actually a very smart decision by sort of pretending or pushing it under the cover and assimilating. So I found that whole story so interesting, and also that he's the only one of his community that has managed to escape and make something different for himself. Whereas you see all of these other characters that come in the book that have sort of accepted their place, which is also very heartbreaking. And even though sort of his mother is sick and he has to come back to look after her, he still manages to leave. So I really, really loved that story.
Yeah, thank you. But I mean, Bhola is a very he's a very determined person. He is highly ambitious, very intelligent. He knows his mind. He knows what he wants from his life, and he will not let anything come in his way. He will stop at nothing. He's that kind of a person, and whenever I spoke to him, you know, he would tell me that since childhood he'd always dreamt of having an education. Even though as a child he used to go to Manikarnika Ghat and pick shrouds, you know, he always felt that education was the only way he could break out of this situation. And he was so determined that I think maybe he manifested having a particular person sponsor him. And you know, he of course there were three other boys from the community whose education was sponsored by this American who was very kind and supportive. And but Pola was the only one who managed to really pursue it to the level of you know, going to college and then finishing his all his studies and getting a degree. So he's unfortunately for the other fellows, he's I mean they unfortunately they were not able to really get out of Chang Ghat, but Bhola is someone who manages to do that. And you're right, when he goes to college, he hides his identity because he's aware that, you know, the moment he informs anyone about his background, that his father, his brother, his uncles cremate corpses, people start to distance themselves from him. That's what he feels, that's what he has experienced. And so when he decides to leave Chang Ghat and pursue education in another city, which is in Ludhiana, he hides his caste. He hides the fact that he's the son of a corpse burner because he wants his identity to be much different. He wants to forge his own identity, and so he works very hard in doing that. You know, he'll make sure that his hair is combed in a particular way. He'll always make sure that his shirts and pants, everything is ironed, that he looks very smart and presentable, that his shoes are always polished. You know, he's made an effort to learn English. And there were times in college when his friends used to sometimes make fun of him that if he mispronounced a certain word. And he never let that kind of humiliation deter him. You know, he would just ask his friends, okay, can you repeat how to pronounce a certain English word? And then when they would help him or explain it to him, then he would repeat that word constantly so that he would learn how to pronounce it. So the point that I'm trying to make through this example is that he does not let anything affect him. If anyone is pointing fingers and saying, hey, you can't do this, he'll say, let me show you how I can. So even when in Chang Ghat, whenever he expressed his desire to go to school, to go to college, you know, he would express his desire to his uncles or anyone else in the community, they would all laugh at him and say, listen, you're the son of a corpse burner. This is where you've been born, this is where you will die. And this is it. A son of a corpse burner can be nothing more than a cremator. And so he proved them wrong because now he's far away from Banaras and he's really achieving his dream.
Yeah, and I really like that, you know, you've included these people's stories who changing the narrative and they're giving hope. Like Dolly, you know, we spoke about Dolly earlier and she has become an entrepreneur and she didn't even realize how rare and how pathbreaking what she was doing was because she needed to fend for herself after her husband's death. So, you know, you spoke about the process of getting the stories and spending so much time with them and all of those things. And the stories are also written in a way, you know, where there's a journey, there are ups and there are downs. So were there stories that, you know, you obviously there must have been stories that you did not include. Maybe those stories didn't have those same narrative arcs, or maybe they were not as hopeful as the stories that we see as the characters that we go into in this book. So which were the stories that you didn't include?
Yes, of course there were stories, and I realized that when there were a few other individuals whose stories I did want to pursue, and track their lives, because I felt that their trajectories were also very, very important to document. But unfortunately, for some reason or the other, it always never worked out. Either you know, when we started interviewing, when we started the whole process of interviewing, they were very forthcoming. And then I think eventually they felt like they didn't want to be a part of the book because they were, you know, worried about the repercussions. Or and of course, I told them that I will hide their identity. I will ensure that their names are not disclosed. And I did whatever I could to give them that level of comfort. But again, I understand completely what their inhibitions were, and I respect them for that. And yes, those were certain situations. And yeah, sometimes it didn't work out because they just I think when I was also focusing on characters who were really who had a very strong idea of where they were heading in their life. And I was also interested in finding out through them how their lives unfolded. And I think and those were the people also who were more, I think, willing to speak to me, who were more accessible also, who were very articulate in their way of expressing themselves. Those were the people also I felt that that I decided to go ahead with and document, who just who were, yeah, I think who were more forthcoming, and who I knew that if I spend enough time with them, they will be able to trust me and then tell me about their lives. So I think it was that.
Yeah, that's very interesting actually, and I can just imagine, you know, the Lakshya character being very forthcoming, because what he's doing, he's so out there in his life, where he is, you know, I absolutely love the love story with him and Komal, who's a Brahmin, and he gets her name tattooed on his arm. He's providing for her college, her school education. You know, you describe the wedding and his personality, their personalities really come across. So I do see how, you know, those kind of people would also sort of invite you in more. And I think that was I love that love story so much. So, you know, one of the most important parts of the book was COVID and the impact of COVID. So obviously, you know, a lot of your research, most of the research involved going there and traveling there and speaking to people. And you also mentioned that during COVID, you know, you had to conduct a lot of interviews online. So could you tell me more about how your process changed during this time? And also the impact, you know, you really go deep into the impact of COVID on this community. So maybe a little light on that, you know, the context in which you were conducting these interviews and all of these things were happening during that time.
So yeah, as we all know, there were the multiple lockdowns that happened, and travel was sometimes very, very difficult. And whenever I had to report, I was constantly in touch with the members of the community. I was in touch with Bhola, I was in touch with Shortcut, Lakshya, Dolly, that's the beauty of technology. Now everyone has phones where we can do video conversations. And yes, they would tell me about what they're experiencing, how the life is when during quarantine, where they are expected to stay indoors. And the fact is that during COVID, we were all supposed to contain ourselves within our homes. And that's great for somebody who has a small family and lives in a large house. It's very comfortable for them. People who are from dominant castes, who are from wealthier backgrounds, as well. However, for people in Changhat, it was a very difficult time because they are, the families are about, there are 5 members, sometimes 6 members in the community, in the family, and they were all expected to stay within their 1 room cramped homes, and they couldn't because it was just a huge inconvenience. So during that period, they would walk out in the gully, and then there would be a police officer who would come with a baton and try to tell everyone to get back inside. So this happened maybe twice a day, like once in the morning and once in the evening, when there would be these checks that would happen. But I mean, that was one thing that they spoke to me about, that it was very difficult time. And then, of course, there was this wave of panic also in Banaras at that time because of the pandemic. And initially, Mohan, Akash, no, none of them wanted to step out of the house and work, but they were sort literally dragged by the dome managers who overlook the cremation ground and the workings of the cremation ground. So they were called out to work 24/7 when the corpses were piling in, and it was a very trying time for someone like Mohan, when he told me that, Didi, we don't want to step out, we don't want to do this work. And but eventually they did. They really didn't have a choice. And someone like Mohan was, when he went there, of course there was a escalation in prices as well. The cost of samagri had increased. Wood, the price of wood, firewood had escalated. All of that was happening, and inevitably, all the work, the services, the crematory services at Manikarnika Ghat, everyone was demanding a very high fee because it was a catastrophic period. And so eventually, Mohan and a couple of other corpse burners who decided to work, not decided, they were actually compelled to work, sorry, who were working there, they ended up also making a lot of money. Only because, this is what Mohan told me, that people, the mourners were giving them 2,000 rupees, 3,000 rupees, 5,000 rupees, saying, please cremate our loved ones, like please do this, because at that time there were just so many bodies piling up. And there was a moment where, Sunny, another individual in my book, he's a wood seller from the Dom community. He describes how bodies were piling up, bodies were being stacked over one another, and lit in the same pile. So it was a very chaotic, manic period. And of course, I mean, Mohan worked very hard. And there's he's there are also instances where he goes back home and Twinkle, his wife, she was telling me that, he doesn't care about washing his hands and whatnot. And so she made sure at that period of time, that he, whenever he returned home after work, she would wash his clothes outside, make sure that his hands were washed, and then only she would let him in. And she also said, of course, that her husband made a lot of money, so that she was grateful for. But look at what cost. There was a huge risk involved in what Mohan was doing. But during this period, Mohan was able to buy certain things like a refrigerator, and he bought saris for his wife and clothes for his children. So I think that was one silver lining in one sense, where he felt slightly in a better place, as opposed to, like, I guess it's just one silver lining, because it's a very dangerous work, and in general it's a very dangerous work, and during COVID the danger just heightened even more. It was a very risky job that he was doing and other corpse burners were doing, and so yes, that's what happened.
Yeah, there's a sense of irony there that, the what you said, the cost of making this money and buying this fridge and putting yourself and having to put yourself in that scenario, which is so dangerous. I think you've covered so many issues in a very nuanced way. You've covered both sides of issues. Not only have you covered, the COVID crisis, the identity issues with caste, the nature of the physical work and the health repercussions on the community, but also the drug use that is increasing, the problems or lack of education, and even the rebuilding of the Kashi Vishwanath and the corridor and the razing down of all of these historic alleys and sort of the cleaning up areas, and the pros and the cons of the whole initiative. So which part, and all of these issues are obviously interconnected. So do you think you could cover everything you wanted to in the depth that you wanted to cover it in?
No, absolutely not. I think even when I decided to write the last chapter, the last sentence, the last word, I felt that I was not done, because there is so much. Banaras as a city in itself is such a important city, historic city, and of course domes, their lives, there's so much to still document, and I'm still learning about the community. I'm still and I hope that there are more books written about the community, because there are multiple facets to their lives which need to be documented. So yes, there was I covered a lot, but I still feel there is certainly much more to be written about.
Yeah, definitely. I first came across this community in a book that I was editing, Udayan Mukherjee's book called Essential Items, where there's a fictional account of a dome. And I had no idea that like we always know theoretically, but I had no idea about this community, about any of the nuances. And I think that I was so excited when your book came out, because I really wanted to know more about and all of the issues that are facing these people. So while you obviously, there's so much, there are many books that can be written about domes and the issues that surround them, what do you think needs the most coverage according to you?
The mental health aspect, which I try to do to a certain degree in my book, but I couldn't cover all of it, because, as you said, that I was also looking at so many other concerns and issues and themes in the book. And but I feel that that is something which the children specifically, the concept of mental health is non-existent in the dome community. And everyone is actually just, they're leading their lives. They're not given that time to reflect, introspect, and have those conversations, because there's you know, one thing after the other. They have to make these quick decisions in their life, you know, where their next meal is going to come from, how much earning can one family member get. So there's so many things that concern them, and of course they just don't have means of expressing it. For example, Dolly, you know, she's been through so much as a young widow, and she has nobody to speak to and discuss her situation, because everyone is battling their own issues, own problems, own griefs. And so she is really struggling from that point of view. And so I, you know, this is something that I spoke about in my book as well, that the conversations she and I had, or you know, I had with other women, it just became very therapeutic for them and for me to a certain degree. But you know, they just wanted, the women just want to have someone to speak to sit down with them, to have conversations, to be seen in one sense, to feel like they are visible, because mostly they are considered or treated as invisibles. And this is from also, of course, the Dome community, in a larger context. But even the children, I feel that because they are exposed from such a young age, they're exposed to these corpses that are coming in and these burning pyres, and you know, and they expected, the boys particularly, the girls and the young girls don't work, but the young boys are pushed out of their homes and expected to go pick shrouds at Manikarnika Ghat, and of course there's Harishchandra Ghat as well, and the Dome boys also work there, but specifically at Manikarnika Ghat, you know, these boys, they're expected to go and work and see all of these sights, see all of the and hear all of these sounds, and yeah, they unfortunately, because they're expected to work so hard and you know, contribute to the household finances, unfortunately they you know, they get drawn at a very early age to consuming drugs, consuming alcohol, and that's a way for them to cope with everything that's happening as well. And so you know, that's the only way for them to cope, because there's so many other things like to worry about. You know, there's hunger, there is peer pressure, there is this expectation to work very hard, and so you know, they do it, unfortunately, and they grow up to this, you know, as Dome men, they you know, have years and years of periods when they get addicted to drugs, and you know, they die at a very young age because of that. You know, sometimes in their early 50s or late 50s, and yeah, again, like I said, the children have no way of expressing or trying to or coping with whatever they face on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I can just sense how much you feel for them, and you know, seeing them and becoming close to them, you know, firsthand, and being there. I think you brought a lot of empathy into the book, and it makes me wonder, you know, these books, you know, they're so wonderful, but I just wonder, you know, what is the impact? You know, are we just sort of reading them in our echo chambers, or what do you think? What do you hope that this book can achieve?
I really hope that the book brings a great amount of visibility to the community, that people are interested in learning more about the domes, because so far, you know, even when I was working on the book, and I would tell people about the Dome community, they honestly did not know who the Domes were. And when I would tell them there's a community that is that is marginalized, that's a Dalit community. It's still considered by many dominant caste Hindus to be untouchable, and that this community cremates corpses, does a very specialized and crucial work, funerary work. They were awestruck, like, because they don't know that this is a community that is expected to have to continue to carry on this tradition of burning corpses, which is an inherited profession, but it's deeply caste bound. And I really hope that people, the readers, get to know this, that that the community, so far I feel the community has been invisible in mainstream conversations. And whatever little bit that's documented is, again, related to the crematory work. Of course, during COVID, people started talking about the Dome community, but again, it was related to the cremation ground. But I really hope that there's more visibility to them, and I hope that the readers are able to really connect with the individuals in the book and empathize with them. And I hope that the community gets the respect it deserves beyond the cremation ground. I hope they get an identity which is not linked to their cremation, which is not linked to the cremation ground, but that people just learn more about them, to know that they are real people living real lives and having real experiences. That's my hope.
Yeah, totally. I think that, awareness is so important, and it reminds me of a few other books that I've read that have documented communities that have not otherwise been documented. So, we interviewed Rajat Ubhekar, who has written this brilliant book on truck drivers. And what he did was he sat, in the backs of trucks. He became friends with these truck drivers, and he documented their lives and their concerns and what they're going through. And it's just a brilliant book. And another book that comes to mind is Nitin Sekhar's What's Left of the Jungle, where he talks about the animal wildlife conflict and issues about conservation. But he does it through villagers who live on the outskirts of these forests and what they are going through and the kinds of complex issues that they are going through. So what do you think? What other sort of, communities in India do you think are underdocumented that deserve more reporting? And have you come across any books that do that?
I honestly have one specifically in mind, but I want to keep that with me because actually, can I have some time to think about this? Is
Oh, yeah, sure.
that okay? Yeah, but I also wanted to mention that when you asked me about what is my hope about from this book, I also, like, really feel that we are, a lot of us live in a bubble, and we don't think about communities beyond, or people beyond our lives. And we are already, we as human beings tend to focus on this on our differences more than our similarities. And I feel that at the end of the day, each one of us want to be respected and treated with dignity and kindness and compassion. And I really feel and hope that people's perspectives about the domes, whatever perception they have, changes, or it becomes more nuanced and more informed. So that's also one hope.
No, definitely. That makes complete sense. So yeah, coming back to the committees, maybe you could give me some book recommendations, that you think, writers who have documented other communities that have done that really well.
Book recommendations. I would say that I have personally read Jhootan by Om Prakash Valmiki. There is Baluta by Daya Pawar. There is Akarmashi by Sharang Kumar Limbare. These are the books, and of course, if anyone wants to know more about the domes in Orissa, there is this very, very insightful book by Sumit Samos called Affairs of Caste, and I would recommend that. And of course, Yogesh Maitra's recent book. So those are the books that of course, Chotan was something that was a book that really impacted me, and Baluta by Daya Pawar also impacted me immensely.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's a lot of also secondary research that you've done along with the primary research that, makes the book so holistic. And I really love the fact that, I think in this whole interview, I really love the fact that I was very fascinated with your process because you just went there and you just started and, built these relationships over time and you had that patience. Okay, so thanks a lot. And that brings us to our last section, which is the rapid fire round. So you will have to answer in one line or one word. Okay.
Okay.
Your favorite story in the book.
It's a tie, to be honest. It's Bhola and Lakshya and Komal stories.
Yeah. I think mine too. Okay. The person you became closest to in this whole process.
Oh, definitely Bhola. Dolly a close second, but Bhola, he is such a phenomenal person. He really, really is.
Wonderful. And who are you most in touch with?
Again, Bhola. I'm also in touch with him. Sorry if I'm offending your rapid fire, but I'm also he's brought his nieces to Chennai, where he is currently, and he's put them in school, which is a big
Wow.
step because girls, the parents don't allow girls to leave the city. Especially for education, and he's convinced his sisters and brother to allow their children to, the girls to come with him, to travel with him to Chennai and study there. So it's, I'm constantly in touch with him, and he keeps telling me about their progress. It's absolutely so wonderful to know that that the girls are getting educated.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. That's fantastic. Okay, what was one thing you learned that you didn't know before?
I think I learned that something as some there's just one bed in most of these one room homes, and only the men are supposed to sleep on the bed. And so Dolly, even when she lost her husband, she has one bed in her small home, and she continues to sleep on the floor. So the husbands, what happens in the community is that the husbands sleep on the bed, and the wives, even if they are pregnant, they sleep on the floor. And Dolly, even after her husband's passing, it's out of habit, she sleeps on the floor, so the bed is empty. And now, of course, her older son, sorry, is sleeping on the bed. So, and
Yeah,
many other insights.
that also struck out to me, the sleeping on the bed. One topic that is on your bucket list that you definitely want to write about.
I don't want to give away, but my next book, if I do write one, will be definitely on women, so and a specific community, but I don't want to give away too much
Okay,
information
that
if
was my
that's
next question. It was what you're planning on
okay.
next, but we'll see it when it comes out, and I'm sure it'll be just as fabulous as this one. Okay, so one place in India that is on your bucket list to visit.
That would be the Northeast.
Yeah, mine too. Okay, some reactions you got from the people that you have featured in the book.
I think initially they were just curious, very curious, and like I said, some of the members of the community, some of the community members were not like even in their answers, they would, if I would ask them something in general, it would be a very, very short answer. It would not be an engaging one. It was like they were showing a certain degree of indifference. This was, of course, in the initial stage when they had no idea who I was. And so when I spent a lot of time with them, eventually they opened up. And Mohan was one of those people who really opened up. Initially, my interactions with him were, you know, he was very reticent, and his body language was very stiff. And he would not respond. Like he would give like this one-worded answers. And but over a period of time, he just opened up. And this one particular moment where I was sitting on a boat with another person from the community, and Mohan was in this process of dhulna, which is sifting ash. And he's in the water in the Ganges, and he comes to me, and he starts telling me about what he's doing. And he's showing me the contents of the ash, which has, you know, a bone, a broken clay pot. And then he pulls out this one small piece of bone, which is bone white, like it's really white. And he says that this belonged to it belonged to someone's foot. And, you know, like he just started voluntarily telling me about what he does and what his whole process is and how much time he spends in the water. And I thought that was a big breakthrough for both of us, because he realized that, you know, I'm not somebody who just woke up one day and just decided to come once or twice. I was coming repeatedly to Manikarnika Ghat. And so he really got into it eventually and started telling me about his life and, you know, what he does and all the whole process behind his work. So
Yeah,
that was a big feedback, yeah.
you really built the
Takeaway.
trust. Yeah, you really built the trust between them, and also, you know, just made me think about the number of skills you need to write a book like this, which is not only patience and not only really good writing skills and the ability to structure a book, which you have done so well, but also, you know, being able to do research and being able to ask the right questions, and so much goes into it. Okay, so the last question of the rapid fire is, how has writing this book changed you as a person?
Oh wow. I would say it's changed me quite a bit. Like initially I had an understanding that yes, there is caste discrimination in the country and it's quite widespread. But when I personally went to Chand Ghat and just saw how they were living and the problems they face and their everyday challenges. Even like how I mentioned, you know, my experience of walking with the kids, going to the ghats, and you know, they're telling me about the priest at the temple, and there were many other incidents which are in the book, of course, but that really told me how strongly, how deeply embedded this you know, the caste discrimination is, and how the domes continue to face it every day in many ways, in varying intensities. And so it changed because, like, I changed because I learned a lot through them. And yeah, I mean, I'm certainly more at a place where I'm more informed, more empathetic, and I really hope that I continue to learn from them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I can't imagine what a journey it must have been for you as well. And great to hear that you're starting on the next one. Sounds very exciting. Thank you so much for this interview. I think, you know, as I mentioned, I think this is one of the best books of nonfiction I've read this year. And I love learning about all the people that you've chronicled with so much empathy.
Thank you so much, Tara, for having me. I am a huge fan of your podcast. And I'm sorry that the rapid fire wasn't so
That's
rapid,
fine, yeah.
but I really enjoyed speaking to you, and thank you for the engaging questions. I really it was a very good experience
Thank you. Thank
talking
you
to you.
so much. So here we are. We're at the end of yet another journey into the many worlds of books and beyond with Bound. I'm Tara Khandelwal.
I'm Michelle DeCosta. And this podcast is created by Bound, a company that helps you grow through stories. Find us at Bound India on all social media platforms.
So tune in every Wednesday if you live, eat, and breathe books. And join us as we discover more revolutionary books and peek into the lives and minds of some truly brilliant authors from India and South Asia.
And don't forget to keep your love for stories alive for books and beyond.